6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. We're in Central Time here in the middle of America. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. Thank you so much for joining us in this segment. It's going to be really important that you stay glued to your radio or the internet or wherever it is that you are listening to us, even on our Power Hour phone number, 631-359-8232, because we've got Matthias Desmond with us. He has written a book, which has now been released by Chelsea Green Publishing. It's called The Psychology of Totalitarianism. It has been reviewed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who says he's waking up a lot of people to the dangerous place we're now with a brilliant distillation of how we ended up here. And see, here's the thing. We've got mass formation psychosis, some sort of a hypnosis that destroys ethical self-awareness and robs individuals of their ability to think critically. They've had roughly 20 months with us. And this book is on sale right now. And you can, any place that they sell Chelsea Green products, I'm sure. And Matthias will tell us where to buy this book, where you can get it now. It just went on sale as of the 16th of this month. So if you want to get into the nuts and bolts of where we are and how we got here and how they advanced all this, and we're going to get into some serious discussion here and take your phone calls, 844-769-2944, because Matthias might say something that triggers a question in your mind that you have to discuss, because it's really important we get our heads around this if we're going to rise up and stop this nonsense before we get to mission critical and it's too late to turn back. Matthias Desmond, welcome so much to the Power Hour, sir.
Thank you, Dave. It's great to be here.
So now you got motivated enough to write a book like this. What started it all for you?
That's a good question. So, I don't know. In the beginning of the corona crisis, from the first days on, I had the feeling that there was something wrong with the statistics. I'm a professor in clinical psychology, but they also have a master in statistics. And in the beginning of the crisis, I started to study the statistics a little bit, and I immediately got the impression that they dramatically overrated the dangerousness of the virus. And I wrote a few opinion papers trying to show people that the statistics were wrong, but that didn't work. And very soon, I decided to focus on the psychological mechanisms that could make that an entire population seem to be completely blind for the fact that they were buying into a narrative that in many respects was utterly absurd. And that's what, after a few months, I decided that what we were dealing with was probably a large-scale phenomenon of mass formation, a specific kind of group formation in our society, which has a very specific effect at the level of individual mental functioning, namely that it tends to make people incapable of taking a critical distance of what the group believes in. And also, it makes people willing, that kind of group formation makes people willing to radically self-sacrifice, to sacrifice everything that was important to them before the group formation started. And a third characteristic of that kind of group formation is that it makes people radically intolerant for dissonant voices. And in the end, the masses or the individuals that are in the grip of mass formation typically will start to commit cruelties towards the people who do not go along with them, and they will do so as if it is an ethical duty to do so. That's very important. 2 months ago, I was talking to this woman of Iran who lived in Iran during the revolution of 1979, and she described me how she had seen with her own eyes how a mother reported her son to the state and how she hung the rope around the neck of her son on the scaffold before he was hung. That's the end stage of mass formation. And we are not in the end stage yet now. What we were dealing with during the corona crisis was, according to me, a full-blown, fully-fledged phenomenon of mass formation. But we are not at the end stage yet. And if you want to prevent it to go to the end stage in which the masses start to commit cruelties, it's quintessential, it's of crucial importance that we understand the mechanism of mass formation, and if we understand it, we will know what we should do and what we shouldn't do as a group who is not in the grip of mass formation.
Now, you speak with a foreign accent. What country do you hail from?
Belgium. I'm from Belgium.
Okay. Yeah, you speak very good English, sir. Commend you for that. The amazing thing about all of what you have made notes of in this book, we're talking about stuff where they take the norm and make a new norm. And they all did this because they were able to make us fearful of something that you just pointed out really was overblown, should not have been used as a tool to make us all fearful. But they did. They succeeded in making a majority of the people capitulate to taking a jab that they already had invented way back in 2005, and they wanted to test it and see exactly how many people would capitulate and be placed under their control. And I agree about your assessment about them causing, and the woman in Iran that talked about hanging the noose around her son's neck. Obviously, you know, she was coerced through this mass formation psychosis to retaliate. This is something that I believe the government tested on individuals in group study before they actually implemented it through Event 21 through the elite group, World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. Obviously, you've taken a look at what they've done, and this pretty much seems to flow along their same line of thinking.
Well, mass formation is a mixture. Mass formation is a process that can emerge spontaneously or that can be provoked artificially, and sometimes it's a mixture between the two. A mass formation can never emerge when a population is not in the right psychological condition. That's extremely important. You can never make someone believe a narrative that in many respects has absurd characteristics if the population is not in a very specific condition. The population was in a very specific condition just before the corona crisis. For instance, worldwide, 30% of the people reported in a world poll that they felt lonely and disconnected from their environment. That's crucial. That's absolutely the most important precondition for mass formation to emerge in a society, or for propaganda to be capable of provoking a mass formation in a society. So many people have to feel socially isolated. And then once they feel socially isolated, they will very soon start to be confronted with experiences of lack of meaning making. Then once people feel disconnected, confronted with a feeling that their life is without purpose, they will be confronted with something very specific at the affective level. They will start to deal with feelings of so-called free floating or freely floating anxiety, frustration, and aggression. That means anxiety, frustration, and aggression that is not connected to a mental representation, or in plain words, people will feel anxious without knowing what they feel anxious for. They will feel frustrated and aggressive without knowing what they feel frustrated and aggressive for. And this is an extremely aversive mental state, because if people feel anxious, for instance, without knowing what they feel anxious for, they will typically feel out of control. You cannot protect yourself of an object of anxiety that you don't know. And that's the condition where certain narratives distributed by the mass media can have an enormous impact and an enormous grip on society. If under these conditions someone distributes a mass media or a narrative, if under these conditions a narrative is disseminated through the mass media, indicating an object of anxiety and a strategy to deal with that object of anxiety, then all this freely floating anxiety might connect to the object of anxiety indicated in a narrative, and there might be a huge willingness to participate in a strategy to deal with the object of anxiety, even if that strategy is utterly absurd. That's what is happening in the first step of every major mass formation in history. Whether we are talking about the Crusades, the witch hunts, the French Revolution, the emergence of the masses in the Soviet Union, the emergence of the masses in Nazi Germany, It's always the same. The population was in this specific state, and then someone distributed narrative indicating object of anxiety. It could be the Jews, the aristocracy, the witches, or the Muslims. It doesn't matter. If someone puts forward an object of anxiety under these conditions, there is a very good chance that all the anxiety connects to this object, and that people, because they want to control their object of anxiety, start to participate in the strategy proposed to deal with the object of anxiety. That's the first step of a mass formation.
Well, this is very much Matthias, like Hegelian dialectic. They got a solution already. They already know where you're going to go with this thing, so they already have designed all the strategy for you to accept the narrative, knowing it will create a certain anxiety based on the fear of getting something that's overblown. And they deliberately did this. Is that correct? Is that a good assessment?
You know, I always limited myself to the description of the phenomenon of mass formation. At least in the book you refer to, The Psychology of Totalitarianism, I described what the role played by the mechanism of mass formation in the emergence of the first totalitarian states in history, such as the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. And now, at this moment, I'm writing a second book, which is about the principles of indoctrination, propaganda, and brainwashing. And I'm studying it very intensively at the moment to see in what way governments can succeed in artificially provoking a mass formation. And, for instance, it's clear that the way in which the Soviet Union as a totalitarian state emerged was completely different than the way in which the Nazi Germany emerged. And in the Soviet Union, there was first... So the difference between a classical dictatorship and a totalitarian state is important in this respect. In a classical dictatorship, the psychological mechanism of a classical dictatorship is extremely, extremely simple. It's just the population that is scared of a small regime, the dictatorial regime. In a totalitarian state, the psychological mechanism is completely different. There you first have the phenomenon of mass formation. First, there is this mass, this part of the population that becomes fanatically convinced of a certain narrative or a certain ideology, and which is then led by a few leaders, seizes control of society. So, but that process of mass formation the emergence of a totalitarian state can happen in different ways. Like in the Soviet Union, there first was the elite, the communist elite, fanatically believing in Marxist theory, and they used propaganda and indoctrination to provoke a phenomenon of mass formation in the population. In Nazi Germany, it happened exactly the other way around. There was first a mass formation, and then slowly, from the masses, an elite emerged. And in both cases, the effect is the same. In both cases, it's like there is like a diabolic pact, to use the words of Hannah Arendt, between the elite and the masses, which take control in society and install a new kind of state, a totalitarian state, which didn't exist before the 20th century. There were classical dictatorships, but there were no totalitarian states before the 20th century, simply because before the 20th century, the masses were not powerful enough, and they didn't last long enough to be the basis of a state. But very soon, in the 20th century, the masses became more powerful. And in my book, The Psychology of Totalitarianism, I describe exactly why they became more powerful in the 20th century. And the elite had a mass media at its disposal, through which they could recirculate the same narratives time and time again in the population, which made the mass formation exist much longer than it used to exist in ancient times. And so the mass formation is like, the role played by propaganda and indoctrination in mass formation differs between the different historical examples. In this case, well, it's clear that there are all kinds of institutions involved who wanted to change the structure of society from a democratic structure into a technocratic structure, I believe. So it was the role played by the elite was definitely, they played a large role, of course. in provoking this phenomenon of mass formation. That's true, yes.
So the phenomenon itself was the idea of being able to control the masses and make the masses do what they wanted them to do. But see, the narrative had to be crafted, and anybody that was watching the mass media deliver this narrative should have noticed, like most of us. Most of my listeners are very much awake and understand what's going on, Matthias. And when you're dealing in a situation like this, where they're trying to scare the masses into behaving a certain way and turning on each other, well, you're not American if you don't get the jab. I mean, that's what we were faced with, that narrative. They were breaking up families. I've actually lectured to thousands of people that I asked for a show of hands of how many of their own family members rejected them because they refused to take the jab. And this is exactly what you're talking about in this book.
I know, and that's the true characteristic of a true mass formation is exactly that energetically, the psychological energy of this group formation is so strong that it splits families, companies, friendships into, and that it reorganizes society into completely new camps. That's when we are talking about a real phenomenon of mass formation. Before the corona crisis, there was also something like the pre-stages of mass formation. We could notice that in the woke movement, in the climate movement, during the war on terror and so on. But that was not a real mass formation yet. The first real mass formation emerged in the corona crisis when indeed, as you say, a certain narrative organized, on the one hand, a mass, a crowd, and on the other hand, a group that refused to buy into the crowd narrative or that refused to go along with the crowd. And that's these two new groups, the split or the line between these two groups run through every pre-existing group. And that's what a mass formation does. It's such a powerful phenomenon that it reorganizes society and every social bond. And that's also something very important when talking about mass formation. So, because I just explained how a mass formation starts when someone when a narrative is disseminated through the mass media, and when all the anxiety that was already there in the society connects to this object of anxiety in the narrative, and consequently, many people start to participate in a strategy to deal with that object of anxiety. Well, then something very specific happens, because many people at the same time participate in a strategy to deal with the object of anxiety. A new kind of social bond emerges, a new kind of connectedness emerges. But, and that's crucial, I just explained a few minutes ago that the core condition for mass formation to emerge is that many people should feel disconnected and lonely. And once the masses emerge, once this phenomenon of mass formation emerges, it is people have the feeling that they are connected again to each other. They fight this heroic collective battle with the object of anxiety, the virus, and everyone who doesn't want to go along with the masses. They fight this heroic collective battle and they feel connected again. They feel a lot of solidarity at that moment, a lot of citizenship. But now something is crucial. This group, this new group, this mass, is a group that is formed not because the individuals connect to each other. It's a group that is formed because every individual separately connects to a collective ideal, connects to the group or the mass, meaning that in a mass, people feel a lot of solidarity. But it's always a solidarity for the group and never for another individual. And that explains, of course, why during the corona crisis, people were all talking about solidarity. And at the same time, they accepted that when someone got an accident on the street, they were no longer allowed to help him. It was like that on the websites of the Belgian, the Dutch, the European and the American government. And also another example. While people were all talking about solidarity with the elderly, they accepted that if their father or mother was dying at home, that they were not allowed to visit them. So that's the absurdness of the solidarity of a mass. Solidarity in a mass is never a solidarity with other individuals. It is even so that the longer a mass formation exists, the more all the psychological energy, all the love, all the solidarity is withdrawn from the bonds between individuals and injected, invested in the bond between the individual and the collective. And that's exactly why, in the end, in every totalitarian state, which is always based on mass formation, after a few years, people start to report even the individuals that they loved most before the mass formation to the state, just as the mother I referred to a few minutes ago, who reported her son to the state. There's a typical end stage of the process of a long-term process of mass formation. And that's so dramatical, because mass formation emerges because many people feel lonely and disconnected. And when the mass formation starts, they have the symptomatic experience, the illusionary, the experience of being connected again. But actually, what happens is that the connections with the other individuals are even impoverish even more. And that's why once a mass formation, a large-scale mass formation starts, it is usually followed by a second, a third, and a fourth one. That's the dramatic dynamic of a mass formation, a large-scale mass formation. It continues.
So we're getting back into a thing where Biden is now saying that he wants more money because there's going to be another pandemic. Obviously, we're priming the pump. Do you agree with that?
Yes, of course. And also, like we've also seen that as soon as this narrative on the coronavirus disappeared even a little bit in the background, there was this new narrative on the Ukraine war.
We're going to talk about that after the break, because they've got everybody pointed in a different direction, but it's under the same control mechanism. We're with Matthias Desmet, who's written a book called The Psychology of Totalitarianism, folks. We're going to be back for one more segment here in this next half hour with Matthias. We want you to stay with us. You're getting a lot of education today, folks, about why everything's happening the way it's happening. Stay with us.
Thanks. But what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com. Text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors, and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita silver lozenges. of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
One minutes after the hour of 12 noon Central Time, Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. Again, we're going to be approaching the subject of the psychology of totalitarianism. This is a new book by Matthias Desmet from Belgium that is out now on Chelsea Green Publishing. It was released this month. You can get yourself a copy. Matthias, where can people buy this book? Is it on Amazon?
It is on Amazon, yes. It is on Amazon, for instance. Also on other online bookshops. And I guess in the UK it's already available in just the regular bookshops as well, but not yet in the States. In the States it will be available, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, probably from today onwards, yes. The 23rd, I think, yes.
Well, it's a good thing that we're on today talking about it because this people need to know this stuff and why. You have to understand, Matthias Desmet, by the way, folks, is a professor of clinical psychology. So he has had time to sit there and study what is being going on and how we've been hypnotized. And I guess in order to get mainstream mass media, because you bring mass media into this, they obviously need mass media to achieve technocratic totalitarianism. That's where this is going, right?
Yes, I'm afraid it's going in the direction of technocratic totalitarianism. And I got this idea already in 2017. In 2017, I started to take notes on this topic. And it was until during the corona crisis, I started to write a book about it, actually last year. But I had this idea already much longer that we were probably facing the emergence of a new kind of totalitarianism, and indeed, as you said, you need the mass media to for that. As I said before the break, mass formation exists as long as mankind exists, but there is one huge difference between the ancient masses and the modern masses, and it is that the modern masses are so-called lonely masses. That means that the individuals that constitute the mass in modern times usually don't meet physically anymore. And it means that a modern mass exists of individuals who are all isolated from each other at home, but who all share the same ideas, the same thoughts, the same narratives, the same myths. And it is this lonely mass that makes people extremely vulnerable for propaganda distributed through media. So that's the situation we are in, which is a very dangerous situation, I think. The phenomenon of mass formation is identical to hypnosis. It's an extremely powerful psychological state. When I say identical, I say identical. The phenomenon of mass formation is a kind of hypnosis. In a normal hypnosis, there is someone, usually called a hypnotist, who withdraws all the attention of someone else from the environment and who focuses all the attention and all the psychological energy on one small aspect of reality. And once the attention is focused on one small aspect of reality, it is as if the rest of reality doesn't exist anymore. It is as if the rest of reality disappears into darkness. And that mechanism is incredibly strong and powerful. You can perfectly perform an open heart operation when someone is in the grip of a simple hypnotic procedure. I've seen it with my own eyes in the university hospital here in a university hospital here in Belgium, in Leuk. Every year there are hundreds of operations who happen under hypnosis, and there is just a doctor who performs a simple hypnotic procedure, and then another doctor, a surgeon, can start to cut through the skin, through the flesh, sometimes straight through the breastbone to perform an open heart operation, and the hypnotized patient just won't notice it. And mass formation does exactly the same. It does exactly the same. It's in a situation where the population is disconnected, where all the attention is withdrawn from the environment, that suddenly a certain narrative focuses all the attention on one small aspect of reality, for instance, a virus, and then it is as if the rest of reality doesn't exist anymore, people are not aware, that they lose their health, their wealth, the future of their children, and so on. So that's what happens in a mass formation. And once you feel, once you understand that, you also know that what you can do about mass formation. And that's the most important message of my book.
Okay, that's good to know. Sherry in Kansas, you are on the phone with Matthias Desmond. Go ahead. What's your question?
Dave, I remember reading, and you're talking about control of the media, or using the media to do this. Years ago, when I first getting into all this stuff, I remember reading, and this was supposed to be back in like around 1921, and it was one of the big pushers was J.P. Morgan, and I always heard he really was working for the Rothschilds, but they formed, I want to say it's a Council on Foreign Relations, but it might have been under a different name. And they were an offshoot.
That was 1921. You're right on about the history.
Yeah, and one of the first things they did was try to determine which papers in the United States they would have to control to
help create the narrative,
public opinion. Do you remember that?
I do.
It was like 25 or 35.
Yeah, but see, and that's one of the reasons that I was going to ask Matthias the very same thing that you're alluding to, is how this elite group managed to coerce that many people to go along with the narrative, because you have to convince the media that they're all part of this hypnotic state. Matthias, would that be a fair statement?
Well, since the beginning of the science of propaganda, and I'm referring to such scholars as Bernays and Lippmann and Trotter, who were the founding fathers of modern propaganda. Since the beginning of propaganda, it is well known that in order for propaganda to be successful, you need to be capable of controlling the media. What you need is a small group of people who control most media. That's what you need for propaganda to be successful, and this small group of people needs to control the media for 20, 30 years. Because before real propaganda starts, you need a long period, usually more than 10 years, of so-called pre-propaganda or some kind of indoctrination, in which you prepare society to accept what you will tell in your real propaganda later on. So, and that's exactly what we have seen. Yes.
Well, and then under the Clinton administration, because before this, I don't think the newspapers were allowed to own radio stations and TV stations or be in the same corporation. But under the Clinton administration in the 90s here, the FCC opened it so that we had all this consolidation in TV and radio media, and they were in the same corporations with some of the newspapers. So that was about 20, 30 years ago.
So Matthias hit it right. Yeah, Sherry, Matthias hit it right on the head. I mean, got the nail on the head on that one, because obviously we know how it happened. And the thing is that Matthias just explained that you need a certain group of elite to be in control of all the media. And once you get all the major outlets, then everybody else feeds off that same narrative. Matthias, that's pretty much what happened with the corona, didn't it?
Yes, that's what corona. there are even virologists who openly admitted that we needed more censorship, that they needed to be the only voice speaking out through the media, and so on. So, yes, they knew very well that for such a narrative to be believed, and if you want to make people, the population, to buy into such a narrative, that you need to be about the only, that you have to be the monopoly on distributing your narrative in the media. So I guess that's true, yes, and then that's, of course, a very dangerous. That's a threat to every democratically structured society. Absolutely.
Well, and the voice was Dr. Anthony Fauci, obviously. You know about him because he's been pandered all over the place where their vaccines are concerned. Brian in Missouri, you are on the phone with Matthias Desmet. What say you?
Well, I was wondering if he was familiar with the concept of the egregore. You know, I've talked about Rabbi Shabbat and Zevi showing up June 6th of 1666 and claiming he was the Christ and he was the Antichrist, and then reincarnating as Jacob Frank in the 1800s. And they were big on using the followers of Shabbat and Zevi. They call them Shabbatans, and that's what they worked on, was group consciousness, using the hive mind to create what they wanted in the world. And I mean, it just fits exactly with everything. Yet when he showed up, the Shabbatans, they caused the London fire, they caused a plague, they introduced SestuQV, which you can look up on the internet, and all these things were heralding the coming of this egregore Christ. And because of the hive mind, this willpower, it basically created what they wanted. And people just don't understand that. And, you know, they believed in reincarnation. So what that means is we reincarnate, because they had the power. There were a million followers of Shabbat and Zevi, and all this ties in with it. And I was just wondering if he was familiar with it. If not, he could find out a lot about him on winterwatch.net. They've got an article about him. It talks about him showing up June 6th of 1666. But it just ties in perfectly with all that.
Well, Brian, thanks for your input on that. And Matthias, I think you have a lot of historical perspective dating all the way back to Galileo. What say you as far as Brian in Missouri's input on that? Do you find the parallel in history?
I was not familiar with that information. I have to be honest, I didn't know it. But I can look it up. Yes. Well, in my book, as you say, I refer to I start my analysis of mass formation and totalitarianism in the beginning of the 16th century. That's true, with Galileo Galilei and the emergence of the modern view on man and the world and the mechanist view on the man and the world. This entire idea that the universe is a kind of a machine that can be completely rationally understood. That's the root cause ultimately of the concentration camps and totalitarianism. That's what I explain in my book, at least. Yes.
Okay, Patrice in Ohio, you're on the phone with Matthias Desmet. What's your question?
Well, I get the controlling of the media and all that, but I think there's also another manipulation that goes on, which is how they always project on the opposition and accuse them of what they actually do themselves. Plus, they intimidate, humiliate, degrade the opposition to make you feel like you're ignorant and stupid, and they're so sophisticated in their arguments, you know, that you can't even compete mentally with them.
Yes, you just mentioned one of the basic principles of propaganda. Namely, if you want, you immediately have to accuse your opponents from what you are intending to do, from your own evil intentions. That was something that's one of the basic principles of propaganda. If you want to build a concentration camp, You immediately have to accuse your opponents that they will build concentration camps. If you want to do no matter what, you before you do it, you have to accuse your opponents. You have to attribute your own bad intentions to your opponents. That's a basic principle of war propaganda. Yes?
Yeah. So, that's been going on since millennia. I mean, why do you think, you know, you have a Bible and then you have a Torah and then, you know, one is completely the opposite of the other? You have to pick a side.
Yeah, you have good versus evil, Patrice. We know this. You have good versus evil, and this is exactly what's going on. Everybody that wants to be out there, that wants to do the right thing, that wants to, if you, you know, for those of you out there that believe in God, I absolutely loved it when Mayra Flores was on Tucker Carlson last night, and she said, I'm putting God first, and he started laughing. And it was like, well, why are you laughing? Because he's blown away that somebody is coming out with a different narrative. We got away from God, and this is what she's all about. So you see, there is a pushback that's going on that Matthias is talking about in the book, because somebody has to put their foot down and say, we cannot allow totalitarianism to exist. And if we allow these narratives to continue in mainstream media, and we don't rise up and shut them down, like the retired general I brought up in our news segment, Matthias has clearly said that we are in the first stages of this. I guess the appropriate question would be, what are the stages to come that we can expect, Matthias?
Yeah, well, it's clear. If the phenomenon of mass formation continues, it in the end always leads to the destruction of the people who do not go along with the masses, and a little bit later the masses start to destroy themselves. So that's also something typical. The masses are always self-destructive. Totalitarianism is always self-destructive. That's the only cynical advantage about totalitarianism. But, and now, that's the important message. Totalitarianism is a kind of hypnosis. A mass formation is a kind of hypnosis. And as such, it is always provoked by the voice of a leader. And that's why totalitarian leaders use so much indoctrination and propaganda, because they understand consciously or intuitively that their grip on the population is based on their voice being distributed to the population. Now, what is quintessential is the following, and that's something that is well known since the 19th century. What is quintessential is that if the people who are not in the grip of mass formation, who for one reason or another are resilient and do not fall prey to mass formation, if these people continue to speak out, continue to say to the masses that they do not agree and that they don't believe in the narrative the masses believe in, they usually, that's something that was very well described by Gustave Le Bon in the 19th century, they usually won't succeed in waking up the masses, because that's almost impossible, but, and now it comes, the fact that they don't succeed in waking up the masses doesn't mean that they have no effect, that the dissonant voices have no effect. If there are people who continue to speak out in a quiet, sincere, honest way, they will prevent the masses, the mass formation, from going deeper and deeper and deeper and reaching this stage where the masses start to become fanatically convinced that they have to destroy everyone who doesn't go along with them. So that's a strange effect. If the dissonant voices, the people who don't belong to the mass, who are not in the grip of mass formation, continue to speak out, they prevent the masses from becoming radically destructive and cruel. And then the following happens. The masses always will exhaust themselves. They will lose their strength, always. And if the people who do not belong to the masses continue to speak out, the masses will destroy themselves before they destroy the people who do not go along with them. So what is just crucial is that as a human being, we stick to this eternal ethical principle of humanity, that we have to continue to articulate the words that emerge in ourselves and that seem sincere and honest words. If we don't articulate them, we will slowly lose our soul. If we do articulate them, we will become stronger and stronger and stronger as a human being. That has been described time and time again. When a mass emerges in a society, it is always inhumane. Society always dehumanizes. But when the people who do not go along with them do the opposite, become more and more humane, and stick to their ethical principles, such as just continue to speak out, to articulate in a honest and sincere way the words that emerge in you, then the masses will become weaker and weaker and weaker, and the group who doesn't go along with them will become stronger and stronger and stronger. And sooner or later, and usually rather soon, the small group will become powerful enough, will become strong enough to offer an alternative for the kind of inhumane society that the masses wants to install, and they will provide the principles for a new human living together. The power and the importance of ethical principles, the eternal principles of humanity for a human being, is dramatically underestimated. If you read someone like Solzhenitsyn, who wrote his wonderful book, The Gulag Archipelago, after his 15-year stay in the Russian concentration camps, then you see what principles mean for a human being. He describes how most prisoners behaved in a radically beast-like manner in the concentration camps. They crushed each other's skulls to steal each other's food and clothes during the night. They became even worse for each other than the guards were already for them. But some of them, a small group, went in exactly the opposite direction. They reinvented the principles of humanity, and they decided to represent a little bit of light in that pool of darkness. And Solzhenitsyn describes how many of them, even physically, became stronger and stronger and stronger, survived the camps. Not all of them, but many of them. He refers to this wonderful example of Ivanovich Grigoriev. I refer to him in my book, who entered the concentration camp sick, who had a spotless mind, who stayed loyal to his ethical principles in every situation. And this guy, while most prisoners died in the concentration camps in a few weeks to a few months, this guy survived it for 15 years, and he was much stronger when he left the camps than when he entered them. That's what we will have to reinvent. We should focus all our energy, all our power as a human being, to stay true to certain principles, to reinvent the principles of humanity, to re-articulate them, because you can never put them in a definitive way into words, these principles of humanity. We always have to reinvent and re-articulate them. And that's, in the end, if you take a little bit of distance from what happens now, then you see that what happens now is a natural process in which a large organism, a mass and its leaders, put a small group under pressure and push it in the direction on a new path where it will reinvent something, where it will invent something new, a new way of living together as a human being. That's the meaning and the purpose of what is happening now.
Okay, great succinct answer there. Bob in Missouri, you're on the phone with Matthias Desmond. What's your question?
Oh, it's just a comment. Matthias, I don't know if you realize it, but in the 50s and stuff, they were making, when they were making movies, you go to a drive-in or a theater, and they had all kinds of subliminal messages when they're advertising food and stuff like that. And supposedly, I don't know if they did or not, they were supposed to get rid of that because, you know, this was propaganda, you know, get you out and buy food. Was that ever taken into account that they discontinue that, or is that continuing today?
I think they've blown it up, Bob, and made it bigger. I mean, that's the only way. Look where we're at right now. And that's the reason Matthias wrote the book. Matthias, what's your take on that?
Well, of course, the machinery to inject propaganda in the population is a machinery that has never existed before. It's huge and impressive. But I don't know if they make a lot of use of so-called subliminal messages. As far as I know, they are considered to be, by and large, ineffective. There are much more effective techniques than the use of subliminal messages. It can be. I'm at the moment I'm studying psyops and psychological warfare of the American Army. I didn't go through the entire manual yet. I'm not sure whether they still use it, but I know that psychological research shows that subliminal messages are not very effective in creating consent or in convincing people to buy into a certain policy or a certain narrative. So I'm not. I'm not sure whether government makes use of a lot of subliminal messages, but of course they make use of numerous other techniques.
They're in your face now. I mean, that's basically the way it is. They're right in your face with all of this stuff and scaring people half to death. Bob, thanks for your input. We got about a minute left. Do you see America in a civil war now as a result of this because of the collective ones that are out there saying, look, we understand what the masses are going to do. You just explained the masses were going to turn on everyone, and we are just about out of time here. Very quickly, yes or no, do you see the resistance facing the masses in a civil war over this whole thing?
That's something that could happen, but it will be ineffective. Almost everyone who has been studying mass formation and totalitarianism has remarked that internal resistance against the totalitarian state that emerges has to stick to the principles of non-violent resistance. External enemies can destroy a totalitarian system from outside, but non-violent resistance, which is based on speech, is far, far, far more effective. And to the contrary, violence usually leads to a faster process of totalitarianization. So it would be very good to study the principles of a nonviolent resistance, I think, in these
Well,
times.
Thank you so much for that. Matthias Desmond, we've been talking to. Good luck with the book. Go out and get it. Psychology of Totalitarianism. Dave Krieger with you. We are out of time for this segment. In the meantime, God bless you and God bless the United States of America.
Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.